I am holding two secret events in December, a Liverpool meet-up and a London Christmas dinner. Tickets are selling fast. Do you want to enter the Neo-Byzantium? Well, don't be left behind. Click on the link below to reserve your place there now. So what was it about your research or what it was that you've argued in public or whatever that caused you to have these conflicts with the prevailing winds?
For the most part, it's being critical of the critical social justice movement, the anti-racist movement, is essentially anti-racist and or, you know, gender-affirming movement. And so this was mainly due to social media activity where, you know, for example, I retweeted a video making fun of Justin Trudeau. It was just a video of Justin Trudeau not being able to pronounce the words LGBTQ++++, or having to go over it about three or four times. Another time I, you know, I'm trying to think back, you know, one where I was sort of asking, I wasn't actually critical of a, there's an oversized model on a sports magazine or fitness magazine. And I just said, you know, how do we explain this, you know, relatively new phenomenon in our civilization? Is that more about a kind of modernist desire, shock of the new, or is it more about, you know, a leftist desire to sort of level hierarchies of beauty, you know, essentially making that point. Because the model happened to be black, they happened to accuse me of racism. Those are just two examples that come to mind. Also, I, you know, clearly in my writing have been very critical of the woke tendency. That sort of raised the hackles of particularly those who are engaging in grievance studies in the university, many of whom, or some of whom, have a Twitter profile and are very active. And of course, the radical students in the student union, and they're networked together. They coordinate as well as with their followers online to do things such as put in formal grievances against me to get me to have to show up to tribunals. And you know, these are the kinds of tactics.
And you had to go to tribunals?
Yeah.
And what did they consist of? Can you talk about that?
To some degree, I mean, all these are automatically, these things are automatically triggered by these complaints. So there's very little filtering. You then have to show up at a certain time. You're asked a whole series of questions with a kind of a presumption of the fact that you're guilty. That the penalty is never really stipulated or made clear, so you're kind of left wondering how bad it's going to be. And in the end, these things usually just kind of resolve with a kind of unspecified, you know, you've done something wrong, with, again, very unspecified notions of, well, if you do it next time, something bad will, you know, so it's all kind of very vague. But it sort of leads to, you know, in a way, the process is the punishment. So you are kind of wondering, well, does that mean I'm going to get fired next time? And of course, in academia, we're talking about, you know, once you're outside the system, it's basically impossible to get back in. And especially if you've got a reputation as being a troublemaker and having challenged the orthodoxy. So there's a powerful incentive to shut up, and in a way, it creates a chilling effect.
What kind of questions do they ask you at these tribunals?
Well, they'll just go through the rap sheet as presented by the plaintiffs, and they will say, "Well, you know, we have this policy X, which says you must respect the dignity of others, you know, in the university, and this is sort of a violation of you know, this principle of respecting everybody's dignity." You know, so there are all these principles which are EDI inspired and derived, and they copy, universities copy each other. And so they're essentially, they're a priority, you know, universities, some, you know, whether overtly or covertly, are prioritizing what I would call cultural socialism, that is equity and diversity, and essentially ideas of not offending people of certain categories, whether hypothetically or in reality. That is a higher value than academic freedom, the freedom to speak and pursue as you like. It's not stated in those ways. They will always say, we support free speech and academic freedom, and we support respect for diversity and equity, and there's no tension between the two. Of course, that's nonsense. There is a tension between the two, And in that, in resolving that tension, universities have tended to move to prioritize EDI over academic freedom.
So really, it's just a sort of, it's almost a religious thing. It's almost a ritualized humiliation that you have to go through to just eat dirt, basically.
Well, I don't even, I mean, you know, my university's probably not one of the worst, Birkbeck was not one of the worst. My sense was it was much more about these are the formal processes that they must undertake. Then the only question is who is appointed to do the cross-examination.
Well, that's an interesting point then. So you're saying it's almost as though those that are doing this kind of themselves do it out of fear that they know they have to go through this. They have to go through this system. They have to do this to you. They don't really want to, but they have to.
Well, I think there's a combination. I mean, I would say some don't want, there's a mix of motivations, you know, sort of at the upper layers of the university, I think they just want problems to go away. They're not true believers in this agenda. Then you have true believers in the sort of lower administrative levels, depending on which faculty. Some faculties, there's more of these people and some less. Some people are more zealous and others are just time serving. It depends. There's a mix of those motivations. And it's kind of the two elements, the sort of activists, zealots, and the time servers that sort of one enables the other in a way, because the activists can intimidate the time servers, or those that just want to sort of the problem not to grow and want to keep their hands clean. So the two elements kind of feed off each other.
So cowards and activists, basically.
Yeah, roughly speaking. Or at least people who, I mean, cowards, it's a tough one, because I think some of those people have a sympathy for, you know, they have an innate sympathy for anybody who claims to be advocating for the oppressed. You know, even if they, part of their brain also realizes that this is a bit illiberal, you know, they kind of think, yes, but these people are well-meaning, and they're, I actually think a lot of people only look at the label on the tin. If the label says anti-racist, they buy it without actually opening the tin and seeing that there's a lot of authoritarianism baked into that. And so I think a lot of people just, so there is a combination of fear, but also a lot of passive true belief, I actually think.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not see that if something is named using a highly manipulative term like anti-racist, right, or pro-life?
Or gender-affirming,
how can you not see that that is bound to be highly ideological and highly illiberal, as it were, if it's that manipulative? Do you have any theory on why it is? I mean, it seems to have, when I was at university, 1999 I started, goodness me, there were no issues. This was nascent. This was tiny. I mean, I actually remember the first time someone used the term safe space in front of me, when I challenged a friend of mine who was a man, who had decided to dress as a woman. And I was just saying to this person, what earth are you playing at? What earth are you playing at? And I was told by the person in charge of the LGB, as it was then called, Ed, this is a safe space for Drea. This is a safe space. I mean, how do you feel that this is, how has this developed? How has this happened and taken over the universities now, almost to such a degree? Now, ladies and gentlemen, before you go, I must tell you that tickets for my Liverpool meetup and for my London Christmas dinner are almost sold out. So don't miss out on the opportunity to learn about the Neo-Byzantium that we are building. Click on the link below to reserve your place there now. Are you ready for the future of the West?